When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, this is Gene Simmons from KISS, and you're listening to Tom and Zeus from the Shout It Out Loudcast. I don't like them. Stop listening.
Celebrity voice impersonated by Zach Throne.
That's right. We're back with episode 53 of Dome Damage. And this week we have a recurring guest. But this time we're going to talk about a couple of more things besides KISS. And that's Eddie Trunk, volume 4, I think we'll call it this week, Zeus.
Yes. Yes. Eddie Trunk 4.
Yep.
Or should we just call it Zoso?
Oh, God. There you go.
Right.
Yeah, so Eddie's back, and this time we wanted to kind of pick his brain about stuff besides KISS. We obviously touch KISS near the end of the interview, but touch on a couple things in the rock world, what's going on with all different kinds of subject matter, music, physical versus digital, concerts, festivals, some Skid Row talk, because we had those guys on a few weeks ago. So a great conversation with Eddie Trunk coming up.
Without further ado, Eddie Trunk.
All right, so this week we welcome back an old friend of the show, Eddie Trunk, is with us. And this week we're going to talk about stuff other than just KISS. Eddie, welcome back to the show, brother.
We're not talking about KISS. I'm out of here. What are you guys kidding
me? Oh, no, that's not true. That's not true. There's plenty to talk about.
Well, is Ace part of the KISS discussion, or is that a separate topic?
That's a touchy topic there, Zeus.
Why?
Because people, Ace is KISS. What are you talking about?
Hey, before we go any further, I just want to make sure my audio is okay, because I did hear on one of your recent episodes, somebody said one of my interviews sounded like shit. So I want to make sure my audio sounds okay on my radio.
Thanks for calling us out on it. I can tell you your video looks like shit because you keep going in and out. But
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think your audio is fine.
I got 1910 computers. Hey, what people don't understand on a radio show is that when I have guests, they're calling in like from all over in all different places, shapes, forms, who's on a speakerphone, who's not. And, you know, you do the best you can. It's a live show every day. What can I tell you?
Nah, you're good. You're good.
Listen,
believe me.
We've come a long way. We used to be like, shit, we have 5 listeners. Oh, my God. Somebody from Australia wrote to us. Oh, great. Now we're up to 50 listeners. And now, like, the bigger you get, we got to get thicker skin. We get all sorts of shit.
Oh.
After dropping the Ace interview,
oh God,
the amount of fucking nonsense we got, and we're not used to it. So part of us is like,
fuck you.
No better. Yeah, go fuck yourself. Go eat a big bag of hairy dicks. I'm saying everything. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm pulling a Paul and your buddy where I'm just in. Asking for more problems.
The more you look, let me give you a tip after doing this 41 years.
That's right. Congrats on your 40th anniversary.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes.
Thank you. But the more popular you get, the more listeners you get, the more traction you get. That it's all wonderful, but of course it all brings out the trolls too, because
totally.
There's that segment of people that just want to take you down as you're doing well, that just love to
oh yeah.
And that's why, and this is the God's honest truth, and people don't, but it's the truth. I know you guys open your shows and you read through the comments and all that. And I get a kick out of hearing you do it. It's fun. And that's why I was busting your balls about the audio, because I heard that one in the comments.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't do that ever, because it's just, number one, I don't have time putting out like 8 shows a week. And number two, I don't care, because it's like, for me, when you've been doing this long, you know you're doing something right if somebody's still giving you jobs and work and you're still doing it after 4 decades. So it's not that I'm cocky about it. I know that I always get constructive criticism, but it's like, you know, there's those people that just want to, you know, they just want to get under your skin, and all they want is that acknowledgement. They're just looking for that acknowledgement that they know that they got to you. And
that's right.
Just the best thing to do is just, you know, social media, I post, I move on. I never look back at what's there. Yep. Good or bad, because then you can get too immersed in all the good stuff and gets in your head too. So
Very fair.
No, we understand. I like it because we give each other, like the listeners that do are loyal and stuff, they feel like they're part of the show. Similar to how like you'll take callers that you like and they become part of your show. You'll take a call. And it also for us, it's a way to keep the last week's show relevant.
Yeah, because we're only once a week.
Points that we've missed or points that it really hit somebody. We enjoy that stuff. We'll probably end up cutting it back even more, but it's also
we've been saying that for 5 years. We're never cutting it back.
But we like
it. Because it just gives you an opportunity to go off about something.
And exactly. That's ultimately why we do it.
People love, as they say, when I rant or they say poke the bear, and most people get a kick out of that. So if it's coming from the heart, it's legit.
Yep.
You know, it's fun to hear that stuff. So,
yeah. So even with Ace, for us, it's one of our proudest. We have an original four member. It's a huge ordeal.
Yeah.
And what we get is we got everybody's, oh, this is great. This is the greatest interview. Oh, you guys did it. Congratulate. We're proud of you. And then you got the opposite. Then you get the
you guys have spent 6 months shitting on Ace, and then you got him on your show. I'm like, we don't shit on
if Ace knew this. Yeah. You guys do impressions and fucking. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
We love Ace, for God's sakes.
Well, it is funny. And look, that's why I enjoyed what you did so much from the first time I heard you guys and we first time I was ever on with you.
Yeah.
Because we talked about it. It's like, you know, we're all Kiss fans, but at the end of the day, for whatever reason, they seem to be the one band that you have to be 100% on board with everything they're doing on every single given day. And if the mandate changes, you better go along with the mandate.
Yep.
If you deviate from that to a certain segment, you are, you know, cast out. And there's no other band that I know that has that sort of segment of the fans that feel that way, or the band, some of the band members themselves that feel that way. So I never really understood that. So what I most appreciate about what you guys, as I've told you before, what you guys is that you do still have fun with it. You don't take it all too seriously. And at the end of the day, we all still are fans. But I found it funny because, I catch this sometimes too, because you guys were saying after the Ace interview, because I heard it, and you said something like, you know, people are giving you shit about, like, you know, why didn't you tell him his girlfriend sucks? Or why didn't you tell him? I'm like, hey, welcome to Ace Frehley to the show. Hey, by the way, your girlfriend sucks. Like, you're going to go from there. Like,
that's exactly what I said.
Oh, no, my favorite was, why don't you tell him that his live shows suck? That it's not cutting it. Oh, that'll go well.
There's a nuanced way to do that, to ask those questions. It's something that I've figured out over time. Where, you know, you can't just go in like that and just interview over. I mean, what's the point? It's just ridiculous.
Well, not only would your interview be over, the show would be over, because then no one else would want to come on it, because then they know they'd be getting, you know, they'd be getting sideswiped by us.
You got the quick laugh of the 15 people that wanted you to fucking sabotage him and do gotcha stuff.
Yeah.
Everybody else. And like, you know how it is for us. We're not Eddie Trunk. To get Ace, we have to do some work to get Ace on.
Right.
Who the fuck's going to help us out in the future if they know they brought us this guy and this is how we treated him? I mean, it's nonsense. But
Well, I thought you guys did great. It was a fun listen.
Thank you, Eddie.
That you got him. And congrats. It was real good. And
thank you.
Steve was on there. Steve on one of my radio shows yesterday.
Yeah, Steve's awesome.
Big, big big moment for him, you know, and mm-hmm. and this is really a cool thing. Hopefully for Steve, it jumps him into getting to do more work like this and work with other artists.
Well, he deserves it.
Yeah. He does deserve it. I mean, you know, look, let's be honest. A lot of those guys from that era got the shit knocked out of them for about 20 years, you know, hair band, hair metal, all that
yes.
shit. And there's a lot of very talented people from that era. And Steve is one of them. I mean, yep. you think of a guy like Kip Winger. Nobody got hit harder than Kip. Kip's one of the most talented people and always was.
Yep.
The guy is scoring classical music. It does writes ballets. I mean, he's at a level of musicianship that some of these guys can only dream of. And he got the shit knocked out of him. So it's really nice to see some of these guys getting vindicated.
Yeah. Well, his guitarist, Reb, has been hired gun all over the place. And his drummer, was it his drummer Rod that Morgan played at Berkeley?
Yeah, he was an instructor at Berkeley. Yeah.
I mean, down the street here in Boston. So, yeah, we totally get it, which is a kind of a thing here that I wanted to hit you with early is because we have a big New Jersey connection that we've had recently besides, you know, yourself. We had the Skid Row guys on the other day. So we had Snake and Rachel on. And it was one of my favorite shows we've ever done because we all just fanboyed about Kiss. It was strictly Kiss.
Yep.
And, you know, we got the questions afterwards. Why did you fucking tell him about Bach and fucking this and that? Like, because I didn't have any interest in that. It's old news. We know what the beef is between them.
Right.
I mean, it's just, and look, those guys, we've known each other almost 40 years. I mean, they grew up down the street. I knew them before they were signed and I love them, and I love Bach, by the way. I mean, I'm one of those guys that's actually, you know, friends with all sides. I mean, Sebastian's probably the most faithful listener I have in my radio show every day. I mean, he'll tell you. And not just that, though. I mean, of course, I go back to when he first moved here from Canada. And, you know, I love Baz. He lives in Vegas now. So I'm at my place in Vegas. We hang out. And I love the Skids guys, you know, Snake and Rachel, I've known forever. And Rachel just moved back to New Jersey, actually.
Yes.
Yep.
So we see each other a little bit here and there again. So it's great. But yeah, I mean, look, those divisions are going to happen. And in the case of that, I mean, they have been apart now since 1996. I mean, what's going to be said about that has been said. And it's like, you know, if there's ever movement for them to come back together again, then great. It's something to talk about. But until then, it's the same redundant thing. And it's like, what are you going to say? I mean, what are they going to say? They haven't said a billion times. They're different people. They've moved on from each other. And it is what it is. And, you know, look, I do agree that if they ever came back together, it would be huge. And I'm not going to lie and say I wouldn't like to see it. But I appreciate what they're each doing individually now. And if that happens, I'll be all in. But I've always been supportive and love what they do individually as well. What
did you think of their latest album?
Skids?
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Didn't you? I did, too. I just got into it.
Yeah, there's a song in there called October Song that I think is just epic and brilliant. You know, those guys are great writers and they're great players. I mean, Snake and Scotty are super underrated guitar players.
Oh, agree. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Rachel's a great writer and very talented player.
Yes.
And Rob, who's been in the band, the current Rob, the original drummer is Rob, but he's killer. And I think, you know, I saw their very first show with their current singer, Eric.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just quick story on that. A couple years ago, they were opening for Scorpions in Vegas on the residency.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, and I was going to Vegas for my radio show because I was going to do a special with Scorpions in the lobby of the venue before they opened the doors. And I did end up doing that. But I said, you know, I want to include the Skids because they were opening. Let's do a segment with them. And they said, yeah, of course. So like 2 days before I'm ready to leave for Vegas, I get a call from Snake and Rachel. And they're like, we got to talk to you before we get to Vegas. I'm like, well, I'll just see you guys out there. What's up? They go, no, we got to talk to you. And they called me up and we get on the phone on a conference call and they're like, look, we just want to give you the heads up. It's not announced yet, but we're changing our singer. And I'm like, and all the while I thought, because everyone was getting ready to hear their first record with this guy. They did have this guy, ZP.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's not going to be ZP. And they're like, no, we got this guy and he's coming from Sweden or whatever. And I go, well, what's the story? And they go, well, we don't know. We haven't met him yet. I go, what? Well, you're playing a show in 2 days in Vegas. You haven't met the guy. He goes, well, he's flying over tomorrow. It was crazy.
And, wow.
I did the first interview with him joining the band and then saw him play his very first show with them that night. And they literally like were in the same room like for 2 days before that happened. And, you know, being honest, and I told those guys this after the show, the guy can clearly sing.
Yeah.
But he was thrown into the deep end of the pool really quick, even though he was an experienced guy. And he's grown tremendously in that gig. In terms of fronting that band and how he does it. He's always had the pipes, but just the way he fronts Skid Row. And, hopefully this one sticks, but we'll see. But I love the music they make. And by the way, being a big Skid Row fan, I would tell anybody listening, don't sleep on the other records they made with the singer right after Bach, Johnny Solinger.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sadly passed away. But Johnny, the first record they made without Bach is a record called Thick Skin.
Yeah.
Great stuff on that record. Mm-hmm. And they did a couple really good EPs with Johnny, too, that has some great stuff on it. So I know their catalog inside out. I've always been a huge fan.
So one thing I want to add, and Tom, and I'm going to hand it over to you.
No, go ahead. Take your time. Talk.
I think that this album, specifically the one the gang's all here, it actually sounds like of the era, the Skid Row era, the late 80s, early 90s, whereas some of these bands, I feel like, and I was talking to Tom and I were talking about this in a previous episode. We did a thing on Europe and, one of our hosts is like, oh, yeah, you got to hear Europe now. They're really heavy. Or you got to hear Striper now. They're really heavy. Two Gargantuan. And I'm thinking to myself, why do I want to hear a heavy Striper or a heavy Europe? Why don't I hear the melodic rock that I liked when I had it? And I feel like Skid Row, their albums that have come out now still sound like the Skid Row sound. So I'm not missing it. It's not a whole new Skid Row. I think it's because you have the songwriting there and the guitar attack there. And I think it sounds great. And I think Eric's voice works perfect. As close as you're going to get to fitting the music like Baz fit earlier. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, look, make no mistake, and I'm not just saying this because he's a friend. Sebastian Bach is a high, high bar when it comes to not just singing,
totally,
but also performing. Like, I used to go see Skid Row in New Jersey before Sebastian was in the band. They had a singer before, a guy named Matt Fallon. And he was very good. They were very good. And some of the songs that are on that first record, they used to play with him because they were written already.
Yeah.
But, man, I'll never forget this club we used to have here called Studio One in Newark. And one day, I drove up and I didn't know that they were bringing Bach in for that first show. And there were a bunch of limos out front. And I was like, said to the doorman, I said, who's in here with all those limos? And they go, oh, these are all these record companies coming to see Skid Row. I go, they play here like every week. Why there's limos on this stuff? Oh, they got a new singer. And then when they came out that night and I see this kid at the time is like 20 years old, 6'5", whatever, swinging the microphone around with that voice and that look coming out.
Yeah.
It turned into a bidding war. Suddenly it went from, good band from Jersey playing the clubs to Geffen, Atlantic, everybody lined up, got to sign them. So I will never diminish what Sebastian brought to that. And I'll say this with Skid Row too. I mean, they've done that though. You're right, Zeus. Nick Raskulinitz, the guy who produced this record,
yes,
he really is a big Skid Row fan and he got them back into that classic sound. But Skid's changed. I mean, they're the one band that had huge commercial success on the first record with mainstream radio, got heavier on the second.
Yes.
Yep. Not even heavier on the third.
Yep.
Slave to the Grind is, Subhuman Race is actually my favorite Skid Row record.
Oh, yep.
Nobody knows it, but it's my favorite.
Yeah.
And then they changed a little bit here and there, and then they even did an alternative band under a different name for a while called Ozone Monday. So they've done a lot, too. But also circling back to what you said about Europe and Striper, those two examples, I don't entirely agree. I think... Yeah, Striper's gotten a little heavier, but to me, they still sound like Striper. And Europe, in my opinion, like their last couple records are the best records they ever made. And yeah, they're maybe a little crunchier, but not like they turned into a thrash band. I mean, they still sound like Europe. Yeah. There's a record they made about 10 years ago called War of Kings. Amazing record. Amazing yep. record. So I still think those bands have still, for the most part, stayed true to their sound too.
So I haven't listened to them, but that's what I was described. If you want to listen, oh, they're a lot heavier there, as though that's going to appeal to me. I'm like, why would I appeal to me the stuff that I liked? I want to hear that kind of,
I mean, it might,
like the core might have of that band.
Yeah, they might have gotten a little bit, but it's not like alienating to what they used to do.
Gotcha.
A band that got way heavier is, if you remember the band Loudness?
Oh, yeah.
So Loudness, the Japanese band, they started out as like a really heavy band. Then they became like a straight up heavy rock band and had a little bit of success. But I've seen them in the last 10 years and they've gotten almost thrash metal. Wow. So sometimes bands do that. But in the case, those cases you cited, I don't really feel that.
Okay. Yeah.
Tom, sorry.
Eddie, I want to talk to you, you know, since we're trying to, I mean, obviously we're going to pepper in some Kiss questions probably near the end, but I want to talk to you about the whole, the festival circuit and how that has become such a huge thing. And you're heavily involved in all those, not just Monsters of Rock, but like Boston Calling, Louder Than Life, Sonic Temple, M3, all these things. When I was younger, you know, in the 90s, I went to all the Lollapaloozas. I went to Woodstock 99, and those were like really like unique things because there weren't a lot of them. Now I feel like the whole festival thing, unless you are a Metallica or a, you know, a U2 or one of these like legendary iconic bands, festivals are the way to go. And I think some of them are incredible, but at my age, I don't want to go to like a 3-day festival and pay $500 or even more, but I do appreciate it. I think the Louder Than Life lineup is fucking amazing. Sonic Temple. I think some of these lineups are incredible, but I feel like this is like the future of rock concerts because we're kind of losing these like super headlining acts.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once, new quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month, so just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Well, few things. I mean, it's funny because for the longest time, you would hear people in America talk about how the U.S. doesn't have any great rock festivals.
Yeah, it was always and overseas. It was always
all
Europe.
The great rock festivals are in Europe and other parts of the world.
Yep.
And that was true for the most part. And then that really radically changed in the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
And a big part of that change is this guy and this company called Danny Wimmer Presents, who I know that I know Danny and I know people that work for his team. And they just went all in with rock festivals. I think the first one they started doing was in Columbus. And I don't know, they changed the name of it a couple times, but in Columbus, Ohio. And now he is probably putting out about 10 a year. And he is buying some up, existing ones that he doesn't already have. And yeah, he is all in on it. And clearly it's working from a financial standpoint. And he's making money. There's a tremendous amount of overhead, I'm sure, but he's doing well. And he really, you know, his heart's in the right place about doing it because he's very much still a fan. And it's about, you know, bringing these great events to an American audience. Do I think there's maybe a few too many at this point? Maybe. I'm starting to worry about saturation. I think a lot of them all start to look the same in terms of some of the billing. And that's why you have a band, in my opinion, you have a band like Slayer, who went away 5 years ago.
The reunion.
All of a sudden announced they're coming back together to play a couple festivals because these promoters are all under tremendous pressure to come up with some new names that people say, holy shit, Pantera, another one. Even though it's only half the band, smack that logo on, everybody's going to want it. Motley comes out of retirement. All of it, they're going to get offered a ton of money because nobody's seen that logo on an ad mat for 10 years or whatever it is. So they're all looking for that, what I call holy shit factor, that band they can put back together, throw a ton of money at them, and eventually they'll cave to do it. But I do agree with you that although I am involved with some of them, there's a lot I'm not. And a lot of them, a lot of people will say to me, well, hey, you're going to this one in Sacramento, you're going to get this one in Kentucky. And I'll be like, no, for a couple of reasons, because unless I'm working it, but first of all, a lot of the lineups look and feel the same to me.
Yep.
My only grievance with these, so many of these festivals is for the most part, almost all of them completely ignore 80s rock.
Yep.
They completely put that on an island and like, oh, that'll only be the M3s or the Monsters of Rock cruises. Why they don't sprinkle that in, I don't know. The only one that does is Rocklahoma, which I host every year.
Yeah.
They have a side stage for it. But for the most part, they ignore an entire genre. And, you know, I just feel like the other downside of it to me is I always felt like a festival was a destination where it's the only way you could see that grouping of bands was to go to that event. And now there's almost like seven or eight of them that, again, are very, very similar in terms of lineups. And lastly, and look, I'm probably very much out of the demo. I'm 59, but I am not going to anything from 11 a.m. to 1 in the morning.
No, exactly.
4 days in a field.
Exactly.
I don't care who's playing.
Right.
So that is a real, that like, and again, that's maybe why they don't do 80s acts, because that's going to be an older demo. They want people that will do that, obviously, and be up for that. And I worked the Power Trip show last year. And if you notice what they did, two bands a day.
That was awesome.
For 3 days. No side stages, no nothing.
Because
they knew 50-year-old people were not going to want to come there in a field in Palm Springs and spend all that time. They did the same thing when they did a one called Desert Trip that was like McCartney and Fleetwood Mac. So there is obviously some concern for that, especially when you get to an older audience. But, you know, I think it's great that all this stuff is happening. I think it's great what Wimmer is doing because it's all in the right place. But, there's revisions I would make, and I do feel we might be reaching a tipping point on just too much.
Yeah, I looked online. I think it was Loudwire, and I Googled 2024 rock festivals, and they had a list of them in chronological order. And it's almost like every fucking state has one now.
Yeah,
and some of them are bigger than others, but again, the big ones, you know, M3, Sonic Temple, Louder Than Light, like, and you look at like the posters that they put out and you got those 2, 3, 4 bands that are going to attract everybody. And then there's like, you know, 9,000 bands that you can barely read the print.
Right. You need a microscope.
you know, and God bless those guys that are on those bills. But like you said, it's kind of weird, like the audience that they're going after, because a lot of these bands, you're either going to have to find them either on a small circuit tour, which some of these bands, like there's a band that I love. I love a band called Chevelle. I'm sure you know who they are.
Yeah.
Okay, I love them. They're either touring tiny clubs around here, which is where I've seen them, or they are festival darlings, which is great for them. But sometimes when they're doing the festival circuit, that's the only way to see them. And like you said, I'm going to be 51 years old. I don't want to spend $500 3 days in Tempe, Arizona, sweating my ass off for 12 hours a day to see two or three bands. So again, boohoo to me, but I'm glad to see that you're kind of agreeing that the festival thing seems to be getting a little bit out of control. And it's not just rock festivals. It's hip hop. It's pop. It's, you know, 90s alternative. Like they're going crazy. And I guess my original question was, I feel like it's kind of a statement on where like rock music is, that this is kind of the only way to get these bands to perform is to stick all of them together, because none of them are big enough to headline.
No, I don't really think that's the case. I don't see that being the case. I just think there's a mentality that the more logos you can slap on an ad for a festival, the more impressive it looks to some people. Yeah,
true.
And I believe less is more. You know, I'd rather have four bands and have them be all killer, and maybe that fourth slot is an up and comer, and then three killer bands. Because I just think it's overwhelming. And I don't know anybody that gets there at 10:30 in the morning and watches everybody. I mean, I just think that it's a drain on the production. It's a drain on the people that work the festival. I never quite understood it, but it's obviously, you know, look, these guys, it's their money on the line. They know better than I do. But the thing about it, Tom, is that all of those bands, they are all, everyone is touring, because it's where all of these guys make their money.
Yeah.
So if they're playing a festival, in the business, there's what's called a radius clause, which means if you're booked on a festival in Boston, say, you're probably going to have in the contract that you can't play New Hampshire, Connecticut, whatever it may be around that area, say 120-mile radius. But if you look, you'd see Chevelle playing maybe just outside that radius. So what it would mean for you is, okay, I only care about seeing Chevelle. You got to get in the car, drive 2 hours to get outside of the festival radius. And the benefit of that is, instead of fighting 50,000 people, you're going to be in a room with 700 people or whatever they draw.
Yep.
And you're going to, instead of seeing 40 minutes, you're going to maybe see 90 minutes from the band you love. Like, I love Rival Sons.
Yep.
But I'll never go. Rival Sons just opened for Smashing Pumpkins. I told those guys, nothing against Pumpkins, but I'm not coming to see you there.
No.
I looked at their routing, and I saw a headline date, and I'm like, boom, I'll travel. I'll go to House of Blues, watch these guys play for an hour and 45, do their own show.
Yep.
And that's exactly what I did.
Yep.
So takes a little, you got to do a little, be a little resourceful. You got to maybe travel a little, but you got all these guys, you'll have plenty of opportunities to see outside of a festival.
Yeah.
It just might not be at the time that festival's happening, because of the radius clause.
Yeah. I mean, a similar band, you know, I'll finish up with this, a similar band that I love that is Avenged Sevenfold. Saw them last summer. I'm seeing them in a few weeks in Manchester, New Hampshire. They're doing another North American tour on their new album, which is, you know, I love it. I know it's polarizing to fans, but that's a separate story. But they do festivals too. But you're right. I guess they're a bigger tier band that can headline, you know, arenas and whatnot. I just think it's funny, you know, like growing up and going to Lollapalooza every year and hitting Woodstock 99, which was a once in a lifetime disaster. Those were like events, you know, and I know that these festivals are events too, but like Boston Calling, like Foo Fighters is one of the headliners. Like I love Foo Fighters. Luckily for me, they're coming back to Fenway as part of their regular U.S. tour.
Yeah, that's my point. All these bands play everywhere constantly.
Yep.
The only reason to go to a festival is for that experience of being bombarded for 4 days or whatever.
Yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. I'm too old.
Any band on that bill, you're going to have Foo Fighters play constantly. You have a million opportunities to see them.
Yep.
So you just got to like pick your spots and wait it out and don't get that. And by the way, that ties into my other point about that's why People are figuring that out. That's why all these promoters are under the gun to say, shit, let's go try to reunite Slayer. Let's go try to get Pantera back. We need a hook. Then after they get them on the festivals, then what do you see happening? Pantera just plays Madison Square Garden.
Yep.
You know, they go out. They're going to do the run. So that's exactly how it works.
Yeah. Zeus.
So one of the things we had an episode on, we did on Dorm Damage, is like these legacy acts, Eagles, Kiss, other bands like that, that were not releasing new music, but they're out touring. And what I was saying, and this was my theory, and I would love to hear yours, is that there are no new rock bands that can sell like those bands can. And so when they should retire, they're presented with, hey, The Who, which, you know, is not the same old The Who, you know, we'll give you this much money. Just go out and tour, because that can attract a huge amount of people and they can make a huge tour out of it. Same thing with Kiss, same thing with the Eagles. So those bands, legendary bands, you know, really can't retire because they're thrown money by the promoters, because they know that they can get an audience out there, whether they can perform great or not, it doesn't matter. So they can't get replaced by the newer rock band audience that can fill up stadiums and arenas as the old legendary bands can. And I think that that's what's created the problem. And I'm a pessimist when it comes to rock. I know there are a lot of great new artists out there, but you got to work for it, because they're not going to be on your MTV. They're not going to be on your radio stations. They're not going to be on American Music Awards. They're not going to be on the Grammys. They're not going to be anywhere. They're not the rock stars that get pushed on with when you see the Voice or other stuff. It's all rappers and pop stars. So if you want a rock act, shit, maybe we get the Beach Boys to connect with Brian Wilson and Mike Love, and we'll pay them a gazillion dollars to call it a reunion, Beach Boys. Or, hey, the Stones, just do 6 shows. We'll pay you a gazillion dollars. There's nobody filling in that void, with the exception of Metallica and Foo Fighters, for rock.
Well, this Friday, I've got Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day on my show.
Okay, there's one. Yeah.
And whether you like them or not, they're still doing stadiums. They're about to do a stadium tour this summer. So, I mean, that's a draw. Tom mentioned Avenged Sevenfold. They're a younger band. They're not young, but they're younger. I know Shadows, the singer. He's a great guy. He's a very smart guy.
Yep.
And they've done some things that people haven't agreed with, and some people have liked what they've done, but they've managed to hold a tremendous base. Look at I'm not a huge fan, but look at the business Tool does. Tool is in arenas right now. I just today on my radio show, I just got the stats for the biggest ticket selling, money making top 10, and they were like number 9 last week in making money. That's a band that doesn't even sniff radio play. They make 15 minute songs, but they're filling arenas.
Yeah.
This band Ghost, I mean, I don't know what to make of them, but they're now at an arena level act.
Pearl Jam
is like almost Grateful Dead, like with the following that people have with them. So they may not all be our cup of tea, some of these bands, but they're there and it's encouraging. And I think there's some others kind of bubbling under that I'm excited about. I mean, I love what Dirty Honey does.
Yep.
I've loved Rival Sons since day one. They can't seem to get really over the hump in America. I love the Struts. But the Struts, I think the problem with the Struts is they're too pop for rock and they're a little too rock for pop. So they kind of fall in a gap. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them get a little edgier myself. But, I know those guys. I mean, they're pretty steadfast in what they want to do. And that's cool that, they've got their beliefs. But, yeah, I mean, I hear that thing all the time. It's like when all these iconic bands go away, who fills the void? But I wouldn't say I'm optimistic, but I'm not pessimistic either. I feel there's enough there that it's going to kind of figure itself out.
Yeah. I see that. I just think that's why certain bands just don't retire. Like, how much money does Don Henley really need?
Right.
I mean, but they throw so much at him.
Right.
He's why not?
I don't care. I don't care what band you're talking about. They're all going to say, well, we came back because we missed the fans, or we came back because no, at the end of the day, they got a ridiculous offer that they couldn't say no to. And by the way, I'm a capitalist. I got no problem with that. I'm not judging them for doing it. But don't deny, as I say all the time, that second word in music business often looms larger than the first. Yeah, and if you're sitting on your cash for 4 or 5 years and somebody offers you $100 million to go out and play 10 shows or whatever, you're going to get off the sofa. And even if these bands are retired, what a lot of fans don't know is they still retain their agents and often their management. And those managers and agents will field calls from promoters constantly, all throwing numbers at them and saying, hey, could we get such and such together? And what would it take? What would it take? And every year they stay away, absence makes the heart grow fonder and makes the guarantees go higher. Yeah. And every year they stay away, they throw a number that's bigger and bigger until, you know, in the words of the Godfather, an offer they can't refuse.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eddie, I'm sure Zeus will jump in on this because I think we may have talked about this, but and it kind of leads, it's kind of a little bit connected to Zeus's question about bands like the Eagles and Kiss and the Who, the people that are spending their entertainment dollars on concerts and physical products is where I'm getting at, is the whole idea of like the anniversary reissue packaging. And I saw your post the other day, and I will give you credit right now. I'm actually glad that you're here on the show to give you the kudos, because I never really paid attention to a band like UFO until I started paying attention to you, Eddie, and listening to you. And now I'm trying to sell UFO to Zeus. and the anniversary release of Lights Out. And I think that a packaging like that, where, you know, it's the remastered thing, but then you're giving us extras. You're giving us live concerts that may not have existed. When Rush did all their box sets and filled it with goodies. When Metallica did all their anniversary box sets and filled them with goodies. Alice in Chains did a 30th anniversary of Dirt, 30th anniversary of Jar of Flies, like all these fantastic reissues. And it's 2024. So I'm in my head, I'm like, okay, 40 years ago was 1984. We're going to get something this year from Prince, probably for Purple Rain. We're going to get something from this band. And I feel like it's almost on the same level as throwing $100 million at the Eagles. These record companies, Kiss does it. Oh, it's the 40th anniversary of this. Here's a swirled vinyl with a picture disc thing. And it's the stuff is gone in 10 minutes. Cause I think our people, our age, I know I'm going to sound like a, you know, okay, boomer, old man. We're the ones spending a lot of money on entertainment dolls, concerts, and physical products.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I find it really interesting because all we hear about is nobody wants physical products, but every day I'm on the radio talking about another reissue that's coming out today. Yep. Def Leppard announced $100 version of Pyromania.
Yep. I'll buy it.
Yeah. Every day there's a different thing, it seems like. And look, I love a lot of that stuff. You know, in full disclosure, I get a lot of it for free because of what I do. Sure. I'm not going to lie about that, but yeah. I do the stuff I really like. I got no problem going out and buying. If they didn't send me that UFO Lights Out, I would have certainly went and bought it.
Yep.
But it's an interesting dynamic there. But I think that so much when fans talk about that stuff, the one mistake they make, I think, is they put so much of it on the band. And I think what they don't realize is often the band has nothing to do with it.
Very true.
There are cases where they do, but the record companies own these records and these recordings and these masters. And they have to want to do it. They have to have the source material to feel like there's enough to do something with it. And then you hope that they get the band involved so that there can be some supervision from the band that actually made the record. But the misconception is that they need the band to do it, and they don't.
Right.
Do you know how many times I've been in my radio studio and an artist has walked in, seen a CD package sitting on my desk, and picked it up and goes, "What's this?"
Yeah, I believe it.
What's on it?
Yeah.
What's in it? They have no clue.
Imagine that.
Because the label, look, if you own, say you own the rights to Kiss Destroyer, mm-hmm. right? And you're, in this case, Universal, which actually does.
Yep.
And you've got this catalog piece sitting there. Your job is to figure out how many times you can get the people who love that record to buy it again. You want to maximize your catalog. And that's what it comes. And look, I have no problem with people that are into vinyl. I'm still a CD guy to my core. People are surprised because I am not on the vinyl kick at all.
Thank you.
But I believe, and I have no problem with vinyl. I love people buying things physically, however they do it. But I believe a lot of what's going on with vinyl is 100% marketing. Because for 20 years, they told you to get rid of your vinyl. The CD was superior. Everybody like sheep did it. Yep. Now you're made fun of if you're into CDs, but you know what? Vinyl's the cool thing. Well, why? I was in a Barnes & Noble yesterday. They're taking single albums that are 36 minutes long, putting two tracks on every side, turning it into triple gatefold vinyl. You got to flip the record every two songs. It costs $70.
Yep.
The label's marketing it. They're remarketing it. Now, in a couple of years, they're going to be like, you asshole, you flipped a record five times to hear three songs. You went out and bought that. What are you doing when you can get this shiny little, I got one somewhere, this shiny little beautiful CD that you can slide in and hear the whole record and access any song. So that's right. I got mine somewhere too. So that's coming back down the pipe. Now they're trying to tell you cassettes are cool.
That
Eddie, can I jump in here, please?
Hold on. I'll say one thing quick. There is no worse way to consume music than a cassette. It is the shittiest quality ever. And
eight
I don't
track.
Know.
Eight-track.
Okay, all right. Eight-track. Eddie, don't jinx us.
It's got nostalgia in there. What I wanted to get into was, perfect example, we've been talking about this. Bon Jovi's debut album is one of my favorite albums. That was my band. I listened to Runaway when it hit the top 40, and I was like, who the fuck is this band? I was into them with 7800 Fahrenheit. I even had the VHS of their videos before Slippery When Wet came out. So when they got big, I was all pissed that people discovered my band. That's bullshit. That's my band. You guys don't know them. Anyway, they released the debut album, which I fucking adore. I have so much nostalgia for. As a 40th anniversary. Now, 30 year anniversary for Jar of Flies, which is one of my and Tom's favorite albums in college. We burnt that to the ground. Both of them, anniversary issues, have fucking cassettes and no CDs.
Yep.
I went crazy about it on the air.
I saw it and we posted about it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
absolutely insane.
It's totally insane, especially in those cases, because it's like, you know, it'll cost them another 40 cents to put a CD in that box, too, so people have that. But again, it's just the marketing. It's what's the cool thing right now. It'll swing back around. As soon as they brainwash everybody into getting rid of all their CDs, they're going to remind everybody that the reason why CDs put vinyl out of business for 30 years is because all the reasons they're superior still apply. But that's not the narrative now. But look, that's just the music business being the music business. They need to, the biggest money in some cases is in the catalog that you own. So how many times can they talk you guys into buying, say, Dark Side of the Moon or buying Thriller or buying whatever? Pyromania has been reissued like four times. And by the way, that's interesting because the thing I noted about that today is there is no vinyl because the whole selling point of this is these surround mixes and all of that. You can't do that on an analog format. You need DVDs and Blu-rays to get a surround sound. So it's all just cyclical and it's all just marketing. And look, again, I think it's wonderful people connect with music physically, no matter how, like whatever their format is. I just see through the marketing. I get it and I get why it happens, but I think a lot of it's marketing. And the last thing on this is like, it's also funny because they'll stick a sticker on a record. And it's like triple half speed, double remastered in 122K from the original source. Nobody knows what that means. Most people don't even know what it means to remaster something. It's all just, holy shit, I got to have this, man. It's like in 55 gram vinyl. Well, if it was in 22 gram vinyl, would you know the difference? Hell no. Because most of you guys are playing them on shitty turntables on a closing play, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's like the new Eddie Kramer. Like, they fucking think they're touching dials and getting this exact sound that you're supposed to have.
Well, I will say this real quick. I'm a vinyl nerd, okay? And I'm in a couple Facebook groups in the vinyl community. And I'm telling you right now, Eddie, these people are more concerned with the type of stylus they have on their turntable than the fucking mute. I swear to God, they're not buying vinyl to listen to it. They're buying vinyl so they can buy a $2,000 turntable and have a forum about the kind of cartridge that they have. Here's a perfect example. Here's an article right now on consequence.net. This is in the United States. Half of the people who are buying vinyl don't own a turntable.
What? Yeah. Well,
that's what you said. That's why they're selling these picture disc, colored swirl, lenticular covers. It's all a collector's thing. Now, I listen to my vinyl. I collect it. I listen to it, but I'm a sucker. I got like 12 versions of Love Gun on vinyl because I have to have every copy that's ever been released. But you're right. I think CD is much more consistent with, I want to buy a CD because I want to listen to the music. Vinyl is, I want to buy a vinyl so I can look at it. Maybe I'll listen to it. Maybe I won't.
Look, don't get me wrong. There are genuine audiophiles out there that have this meticulous equipment and that will tell you that vinyl sounds warmer, better, whatever. And that's fine if you're super audiophile. Most people are not. Most people couldn't tell you. Most people don't know that some of these records, the source material is the CD.
Exactly.
Like, you know, they'll tell you how great it is. It's the same file that they took it from. Yep. So it's just so silly. But there is some legitimate audiophile stuff out there. And look, if that's what you're into, great. I got no problem with it. Sure. I'm not into it. I mean, when you talk about how a record sounds, remember equalizers? Nobody has equalizers anymore? Like, when I was a kid, the biggest thing was to add the equalizer with like the 20, 30 sliders.
And have it all up in the middle and put some up high.
Guess what? That's remastering a record. You're doing it yourself. So just go buy an equalizer. You can make anything sound the way you want it to sound.
So true. Yeah. I mean, I'd just buy the CDs. So here, example, I'm showing him Ace's CD. I buy it, I download it to my hard drive, my computer, and I put it on my phone. And now it's in the car, and anywhere I go, I plug in a Bluetooth. I can listen to it in the kitchen. I have it everywhere. But you know what? I gave the artist some money. I bought the product. I can open it up. I can read it. I don't need to buy a record, which I can't put in the car, which I can't download to my phone.
And Zeus, you got packaging and liner notes, which to me is super important.
I agree.
Because that's, you know, people ask me how I know so much about this shit. When I was doing my TV show and I did that Stump the Trunk bit, how the hell did you know all that stuff? Because I actually took the booklets out, and I still do. I read the credits. I read who produced it, who wrote the songs, who mixed it, who mastered it. I retain that stuff. I mean, that's really important to me. And I hate when so many times I'll be somebody will pitch me for an interview and they'll send me the record as a stream. And I'll be like, hey, can you send me a PDF of the liner notes or something? Because the record's probably not out yet. And they're like, well, yeah, I guess. And I'm like, sometimes some of my best questions come from having read those liner notes to see who wrote the songs, who mixed it, what studio they did it in. Even if you read a little thing like the thank yous in a record, it's like, wow, he thanked some famous person. And that's a question like, how do you know, Peter North? I know I said that.
Nice one.
Hey, he's like you. He's like you. He's in the Shout It Out Loud cast Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
So now you can say you have a connection with Peter North. Oh,
Jesus
Christ. Hey, we can't let you go without hitting a couple topics. We're going to get to the A stuff, but I wanted to ask you, we didn't have you on since the end of the road. So we have a friend. We got tickets. We were in second row. We went to both nights.
Yep.
So you can imagine what we're thinking. Second row, last Kiss concert. What we're going to see.
Nothing.
We left. We met up with a bunch of Loudcasters. Everybody there. Everybody had the same reaction. What the fuck? People were bullshit. There was no thank you. There was no event. And instead, they gave us a QR code. Go buy some Kiss shit. And here's an avatar. Come back in a half an hour and look online and see what you're going to see. It was unbelievably depressing. Nobody. There was nobody that left there. And we're talking, you know, walking down the hallway, you can hear people talking. Nobody was like, that was incredible.
Nope.
It was the same show we could have saw in Minnesota 2 months earlier. Nothing different. It was beyond disappointing. Want to hear what you thought about that last show?
Well, obviously I wasn't there, so yeah. I can't speak from a going, you know, that I was there standpoint. I think I was in Vegas, my place in Vegas, when they were playing here, and being it's 3 hours earlier, you know, it's probably by 8 o'clock Vegas time, I was getting all the blowback from what had happened, because 8 o'clock Pacific was when the show ended in New York. But, you know, I got to tell you guys, and I'm just being totally honest here, when I tell people I checked out on Kiss after the farewell tour in 01 or whatever it was, I truly did. And what I mean by that is that for me mentally, that's when Kiss ended. So everything they've done for the last 22, 23 years, even though I've kept an eye on it, even though I've listened to it, even though I've heard and taken calls about it and all of that, I was never at all invested in it in any way like I was from my first Kiss show in 77 to 01 when it ended, or 2000, whenever the last show was. So, you know, I heard all the talk about what are they going to do? Well, they'll do nothing. They'll do something. Obviously, you know, I had Ace on a bunch of times and I knew him and Peter weren't asked. And, you know, that going into it, that was a really important thing with Ace, because they kept saying they made an offer, they invited him, and he, you know, that was very misleading, because we all know now that they didn't invite anybody.
Yeah.
And, but can I say I'm surprised? No. Was I bothered or wrapped up in it? Not at all. Because again, I was complete. Like I was out of it for the, I was out of it since the first farewell tour in terms of like emotionally invested.
Yeah.
But all that being said, you know, it made me feel good that I made that decision, because I'm this. And also, I do think that it's beyond belief that I understand if you don't want to bring out X members on stage. Would I have brought out X members? Absolutely, even if it was just to take a bow. But I understand, okay, they didn't want to do that. But how you don't run a produced video package,
exactly,
or just verbally break character and be like, you know, and I'm not even talking just ex-members, Bill Acoyne, Sean Delaney, Doc McGee, the booking agents, the road crew.
Yep.
Run credits, run something, do something. And how you don't do that is, you know, stunning to me. And look, I honestly, at the end of the day, don't think Peter or Ace really cared. I think they've also been so checked out for so long. And they, you know, I think the only thing that bothered Ace was them keep saying they offered him and putting it on him that he wasn't there. But the guy I feel for is Bruce, because,
oh yeah,
you know, Bruce wanted to be a part of that. You know, Bruce was hurt by it. And, you know, all you need for proof of that is that Bruce made the rounds, being very honest.
He opened our season. We had him on to talk about this.
Yeah. You know, he was on with me. I mean, he made the rounds. So he made no bones about not being happy about that. And look, I just don't know how you don't. You got all the money in the world. Extend an invite, extend a plane ticket, a hotel room, some limos, whatever, make everybody feel good. And the other thing, and I don't know this for a fact, but I do have people that are pretty well placed and that were backstage and all of that, that are good friends. I said to some of my buddies that were, I said, well, where's the after party? I'm sure they're doing a big party or something somewhere, right? No, everybody just like, how do you like, I went to the Asylum show at Madison Square Garden. There was an after party like in 86, like 85, whatever. I'm like, how is there not like friends, family? You rent a giant restaurant. You have a New York City. Like, how is there nothing? And there was nothing. So it's just It's very, very odd. I don't know what that's about. But I feel bad for the fans that were hoping for something more. But for me, I didn't feel burned or stunned because I didn't spend a penny. I didn't get invested in it. I never had plans. The only way I had plans on going is if there were going to be ex-members, and I knew there wasn't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the extent of it. I mean, I just it's very hard to figure, though, how you do that. I don't know what the thought is there. I can almost understand not bringing other people out to play, but mm-hmm. to have zero acknowledgement, hard to figure.
Yeah, I deemed it a little bit. I would call the whole thing at the end was soulless. Just really
Quesada,
soulless.
I saw Quesada's post as he was leaving.
Oh, yeah, he was furious.
And, you know, he kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, he was, you know, and I mean, you know, from one Hall of Famer to another, nice job there, Joey. Yeah.
Joey wouldn't shut up, nor were his two fans that kept bugging us about putting him in the Hall of Fame. So,
by the way, your drop of Ace calling him Joey Caserta or whatever on my show is the greatest.
Yeah, I mean, that was just – and the guy with the hat, as he called PJ, what I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's a shame. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But who knows? Maybe it wasn't the final show. Maybe
for me, the last
time.
Yeah, the last one I want to follow up with you is to me, that whole Avatars thing is kind of falling flat. And from what I understand, they're kind of walking a little bit back on that. And even when they changed, I believe they changed like the image on Amazon Music and Spotify of the Avatars
and their social media too.
Yeah, and now they slowly went back to the original face pictures of Kiss. On that, if you haven't noticed, I think they realized, shit, maybe we shouldn't have released this yet. It's not ready to be a thing, and people are confused. And more importantly, people don't like it.
Yep.
I knew the one thing I knew going into that last show that I knew was, and look, the one thing, however you feel about Kiss, you can't deny that they are business savvy, smart people. And there was no way on the planet that huge captive audience, both on the stream and in that venue, that they were not going to take advantage of that to sell them the next thing.
Yep.
What I thought it was going to be was the introduction of what they talked about doing forever, which is basically the sanctioned tribute. I thought they were going to introduce four guys up on stage in full makeup and costumes, say, welcome Kiss 2.0 on tour next summer, and that Gene and Paul run the whole thing, put a show together for them, choreograph it, whatever. And by the way, I would have actually been interested in that. I mean, Queen does a sanctioned tribute in England. I would have been interested in something like that. Years ago, Kiss was going to pitch a reality show to VH1 where they were going to do a contest to cast the replacements.
That's right.
So I thought that's where the whole thing was going. I had no idea it was going to go into this Avatar thing. And I can't say how I feel about the Avatars because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But the one thing I can say is the reason why I would have very limited interest is because my whole reason for going to a rock show is to hear a band play live. Mm-hmm. And unlike a hologram, which sometimes does have a live band, an Avatar is a totally produced, recorded program. It's like basically going to see a movie. It's going to look and sound exactly the same every night. So that, to me, loses a lot of interest because you're not even hearing somebody actually play instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing about this, and I have a friend of mine who works in this space, actually, and you know, there's been a lot of comparisons to what the band ABBA does in England with theirs.
Yep.
Huge difference there. ABBA actually built an arena to house their Avatars. Like they actually from the ground up built a building, an arena that is integrated with the technology. It doesn't move. It doesn't tour. Kiss wants to tour this. So I don't know how that works with the technology and all of that. But I guess we'll find out. And I don't think probably the sanctioned tribute thing is off the table either. I mean, anything is possible. But I also think it's super telling that a week after Kiss was done, Gene is putting his own band together and getting ready to tour.
And I can't wait to see that.
Two of the guys in that band are really good friends of mine.
Yeah.
Like, talk to all the one of them, Brent, I talk to at least once a day.
Yep.
He was the music director. He's one of my best friends. He was the music director for my party in December. And
yeah, we love Brian. We met him in person with you.
That's right, in Vegas.
Yeah, at the Rio, right.
And he did our show because we met him. And he says, I don't do podcasts, but I'll do yours. Because I think he felt you kind of sanctioned us, which we thank. And he's awesome. He's a great guy and a great
talented
musician.
Guy. Yeah. And it's a huge gig for him. And, you know, they've been rehearsing and stuff and they got that show in Brazil. But they're going to, you know, Gene is super, from what I understand, Gene is super pumped about doing this. And I'm super excited about it because the band is absolutely killer. And it's going to be all real. It's going to be all live. Gene can still sing. I hope they do deep tracks. I mean, I've already been yelling at
Brent.
Like, you know, they got to do, you know, on the eighth day. Something that
dance
deep,
you know all over your face. Yeah.
But you know, I'm excited about that. That's the first Kiss thing I've been really excited about for a while, and you know, we'll see. You know, and Paul's out there selling his art.
Hey, Eddie, before we let you go, can you give us a 60-second review on 10,000 Volts?
There's been a lot of people that have said, "Oh, it's, you know, the 78 record better than the 78 record." Yeah, got to put the brakes on a little there.
Yeah.
You also don't have the benefit of, you know, listening to it for 45 years too. So let's, you know, obviously that plays into it. But the 78 record stands alone, and, you know, nobody is 25 years old anymore like Ace was when he made it, or whatever, 30 years old. But I'll say this. It is a way better record, I think, than anyone could have ever expected from Ace at this point in his life, at this point in his career. Is every song great? No. There are some songs in there that are better than others. Absolutely. Is it one of the better records he's made? Yes. Sonically, I think it sounds great. Steve did a great job. And also, shout out to Bruno Ravel, who mixed the record. For people that don't know, Bruno is the bass player from the band Danger Danger, but he also does producing, mixing work himself. And I think Bruno mixed the record. Really sounds really great in that way. You know, I think that a song like the title track and a song like, you know, Walking on the Moon and stuff, I mean, those things stick in your head, man. Those are some hooky songs.
Wicked.
I love the track Fighting for Life.
Yes.
That reminds me a little bit of something like Too Young to Die from the
Trouble Walking. Yes.
So,
you know, I think it's a real, like, for Ace at this point, whatever he is, 73, with all he's been through, you know, obviously some very uneven live shows, which we've all talked about. For Steve to get this performance out of him and pull a record like this out of him, I think is phenomenal. And you know, I give Ace credit for still making new music, because most of these guys don't and can't be bothered with it. And I give him credit for putting the effort in to do it, no matter how you feel about it. So again, nothing 78, but I think it's way better than anyone could have expected.
I agree.
awesome. He's Eddie Trunk. Eddie, this has been awesome. We love talking Kiss with you, of course, but of course talking non-Kiss and just rock music in general. Awesome stuff. We appreciate your time as always, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Always fun to talk to you. Hope to see you soon. And, you know, keep kicking ass, man. Always fun to listen. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Eddie. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom, what you think?
Yeah, every time we have Eddie on, it's always a blast because we just, all of us love to talk. And, you know, I really wanted to pick his brain on the festival concert circuit thing because he's so heavily involved in those. And, of course, we had a great conversation about Snake and Dave and Skid Row, the new guys there. And he had some fun poking at people who are vinyl fans and stuff. And, of course, some Kiss and Ace stuff. Just always a great time talking with Eddie.
Yeah, what I always enjoy, though, is the little hints that he gives us that he listens.
Oh yeah.
Since one of your listeners says they can't hear shit when they're on my
show. I love that. I love that. That was great. Yep.
And he gives us little jabs back. That's all right. It's all good. Eddie's always an interesting guy to have on. don't always agree with everything he says, but that's why it's fun.
Yep.
To have that kind of conversation. So we hope you guys enjoyed this. Until next time, peace out, Girl Scout.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.